This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
If Jasmine Ward's name sounds familiar, it might be because she won the National Book Award for Fiction in 2011 for Salvage the Bones. Or it might be because she was just named a 2017 MacArthur Fellow, which means she was awarded a Genius Grant. Or it could be because of her new book, Sing Unburied Sing, which has already been named finalist for the 2017 National Book Award for Fiction, finalist for the Kirkus Prize, finalist for the Andrew Carnegie Medal, and one of Publishers Weekly's top 10 books of 2017. I spoke with Jasmine Ward recently about her new book and all of her accolades. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Your book, Sing Unburied Sing, it's told from three perspectives, if I counted right. You have Jojo, his mother, Leonie, and Richie. But, you know, only two of these are among the living. How was writing the different perspectives from the different dimensions?
It was difficult. I think one of the reasons that it was difficult is because I had never written from a dead person's perspective before. So I was a little afraid. Like, I actually, in my first 15, 16 drafts of the novel, I didn't have any chapters written from Richie's perspective. Something that I thought about at the, you know, once I discovered his character, I thought, wouldn't it be neat to write from his point of view too, in addition to Jojo and Leonie? But I wrote the rough draft and then I revised it 15, 16 times, and I still didn't write from his perspective. And it was because I was nervous because, you know, I mean, writing from that kind of perspective, from that dimension, requires you to build a world. That world has to have some sort of logic. It has to make sense. And you have to make it feel organic to the story. And then you have to do all of that so well that the reader believes it, right? And so it's an immersive experience for the reader. And I think that I was afraid that I couldn't do that. And then it wasn't until I actually showed a draft of the novel to my editor, and she said, "Have you ever thought about writing any of the chapters from Richie's perspective?" that I actually went back and tried to write chapters from his perspective. I think in a way she was giving me permission, and I think in a way the subtext there was like there was a vote of confidence, right, that she believed that I could do it. And so once she said that to me, then I went back in and wrote those chapters, and they were difficult. Like I said, because I hadn't written anything like that before, but ultimately they are some of the most emotionally affecting chapters, I think, in the novel.
Now, you said you wrote like 15 or 16 drafts of this novel. How long from beginning to end?
I began writing bad first chapters of this novel in around 2009, right after I finished a rough draft of Sing Unburied Sing. And then I set the novel aside, actually, for a number of years, and I think I basically began working on it again in 2012. So around, I don't know, 6 years probably.
Now, you said you added the chapters from Richie's perspective in later, but, you know, Ma'am and Leonie and Jojo and Kayla all had various gifts. Leonie and Jojo and Kayla could all see the dead. Did you have those chapters in there already?
Those chapters were already there when I added Richie's point of view. Really, adding his chapters, those were like the last big additions to the revision that I did. So I knew, I mean, he was already a character. He was already present in the action with Leonie, with Kayla, you know, with Ma'am, with everyone, really. Nothing of the action changed. It's just that I added his voice.
Okay, so, you know, Ma'am and Leonie and Jojo and Kayla, they all came from the same bloodline, and some could see the dead, some could hear thoughts of animals, some could hear the dead. But then in the book, you also had a hint of Catholicism. Can you talk to me about the different beliefs going on in the book?
Well, Catholicism is actually really prominent in the area that I'm from. You know, the fictional town of Bois Sauvage is located on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Catholicism has been, I guess, a really widely practiced religion here for a long time. And what my understanding of what happened is that when people of African descent were enslaved and brought to the Americas and then introduced to Christianity, that they then incorporated some of the spiritual traditions that they believed. They incorporated those into Catholicism in certain ways and basically sort of made their own new spiritual tradition, you know, that incorporated West African traditions and maybe even some Native American traditions, but also Catholicism. And in some respects, like my understanding is that this helped them to survive. These traditions allowed them to, you know, in some ways it granted them some sort of agency and some power, you know, to affect their own fate in ways that the institution of slavery consistently denied them.
JoJo's grandmother, Ma'am, explained to JoJo that Leonie didn't know how to be a mother, unless I'm getting this wrong. I need to mark these in the book.
No, that's right. That's right.
You know, by the end of the book, JoJo and Kayla both call their mother by her first name. And she said earlier in the book that every time JoJo said it, it sounded like a slap. Was this disrespect? And if so, was it repayment for Leonie's inconsistent presence?
My understanding of how JoJo feels about his mother is that he recognized that because he lived with Ma'am, he knew what a caring and sympathetic and kind mother was, because that was Ma'am. And I think that when he looked at Leonie's behavior, he saw that she was the exact opposite in many ways. In that, at a base level, that she didn't care about his welfare. You know, there's that bit in the first chapter where he cuts his foot and she's really flipping about it. She doesn't really care. And I think that struck him, and that maybe he feels like, you know, to call her mama would be to misname her, because nothing about her is maternal. You know, so in some ways, I think that JoJo might think that it, you know, that it's almost an insult to a mother like Ma'am, or a person like Ma'am, to call Leonie mama when she doesn't nurture him, she doesn't care for him, she doesn't provide for him.
Your prose is so poetic, yet I didn't realize this until I started thinking about the different situations. It seemed very grounded in the four elements. I mean, you had descriptions of dirt and dust, yet the heavy air or the fire that tortured those who ran away, or the water that takes the dead to their final resting place. Did you have these elements in mind when you wrote it?
I try to be aware of how I'm invoking the senses when I am writing. And so I try to hit all of them, right? Because I feel like that's the only way to really create that immersive experience for a reader, right? That you have to, you know, you have to trigger smell, you have to trigger sight, you have to trigger touch, you have to trigger taste. Like, you have to trigger all these things so that the reader really feels like they're there with whoever is telling them the story, and that they're experiencing whatever the, you know, the character is experiencing. So it's definitely something that I think about when I am writing.
I have many lines in the book marked just because I thought that, you know, your use of description was just really remarkable. Is reading aloud part of your writing process?
Yes, it is. I don't read the entire work aloud, but if I'm trying to, you know, craft a paragraph and I'm thinking about the action and how the rhythm of the words and the figurative language, like how that is affecting the action, like affecting what is happening to the characters, especially when I'm writing like longer paragraphs, then I need to read those things aloud. And sometimes I read shorter lines, just, you know, phrases or lines aloud, because, you know, I might have a sentence here or there that has a bit of like convoluted figurative language, and I need to know if it works, if it comes close to working, or if it's too clumsy or too much of a mouthful. So I definitely do read passages and sentences and paragraphs aloud.
This book was a story of family. It was a story of home. It was a story of race. And in fact, throughout the reading the book, those who read it instead of listen to it will see that the words black and white were uppercased in an untraditional grammatical way.
That's a habit that I've developed in my work. I think part of the reason that I have developed that habit is because I often see white capitalized. I don't know. I mean, I can't point you to specific instances of it, but I feel like I grew up reading books where white was always capitalized and black wasn't. And that struck me. And so I thought, well, white is always capitalized. Why can't I, you know, I mean, these are my books. Why can't I capitalize black in the same way? And so that is why white and black, when they refer to race, are capitalized in the book.
In 2011, you won the National Book Award for Fiction for Salvage the Bones. And Sing 'Em Buried Sing is longlisted for the 2017 National Book Award. And you were just named a MacArthur Fellow. Have these awards affected you as a writer?
There's definitely a lot of pressure. You know, these awards are great, and I'm very grateful for them, but they do come with a certain amount of pressure because I feel like as a writer, they make you hyper aware of audience, of what people are expecting from your work, what they might want from your work. And I realized that pretty early on after I won the NBA. And one of the first people who helped me to figure out how to deal with that was Nikki Finney. And she's actually the poet who won the NBA in poetry the same year that I won the NBA in fiction. And we've had several conversations about how to work after you've received an honor like that. And one a very wise, smart thing that she said to me was that, you know, when you sit down at the computer, that you should forget everything. You know, forget audience, forget what you think people want or what they expect from your work. And she said, try to remember that feeling that brought you to the page in the first place, right? So whatever this emotion was that drew you, you know, to the page to tell the story, you know, or to write the poem, she said, try to remember that and embrace that. And that's all you need. And she's right. I was struggling, and I would always, I think back on her words, and that really helped. Another thing that helps is that I don't have any of my awards at my house. I bring them all to my mom, and she keeps them at her house. So out of sight, out of mind, and I you know, it helps so that I can forget them in some ways when I'm writing. I mean, of course, when I come out of the, you know, writing, you know, days, I remember that that I've been really lucky and that I've won these things, but while I'm writing, I can't think about it. It really affects my creative process.
What are you working on now?
So I am currently at the very, very, very beginning of the rough draft of a novel that is set in New Orleans during the height of the domestic slave trade, so in the early 1800s, which is unlike anything that I've ever written. So I've spent a lot of time, more time than I usually spend, I think, researching, you know, because I know nothing about about any of that, right? So I've been doing a lot of reading for it, but I've also begun, like I said, writing the first draft. So it's very slow. The going is really slow, and I think part of the reason that it's so slow is because the subject matter is so hard. Like it's really hard to sit in those situations. And I think I encountered some of that in Sing 'Em Buried Sing, but writing about characters who are enduring slavery, it's much harder.
That was Jesmyn Ward, author of the book Sing 'Em Buried Sing, which was published by Scribner. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover new episodes at KMUW.org or on iTunes. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our editor is Luann Stevens, our engineer is John Cyphers, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.